Today's Shir Masechta Gittin Daf Yud, and we will be Ezra Hashem Yisbarach begin on Daf Yud Amar Aleph at the Mishnah towards the top of the Amud. In order to begin our Shir today, a few words of introduction are necessary. The Sancheriv, as he went on his campaign to conquer the world, one of his strategies was that he would take people from different countries and place them in different places around the world. And there was a country called Kuta, and the people from Kuta, which was a country obviously that Sancheriv had conquered, he brought them to Eretz Yisrael, and he brought them to the Shomron in Eretz Yisrael. And what the Gemara often in Shas discusses when we speak about the Kutim is that the Kutim became Gerim. The reason that they became Gerim, or what triggered the Geris, was that they were attacked by lions, and that triggered that they should become scared, and given that they were living in Eretz Yisrael, they decided to become Gerim. The question that often comes up in Shas is, halachically, are the Kutim considered true Gerim, true members of Klal Yisrael, or are they not considered true members of Klal Yisrael? Are they Geirei Emes or Geirei Arayus? Arayus with an Aleph for the lion. Lions. Our Mishnah, as we're going to see, clearly is of the opinion that Kutim are Geirei Emes. It's also important to point out that the Rambam in the Pirush Mishnayis in Masechta Brachos Periches Mishnaches, going into discussing who the Kutim were and what their history was, he says that even though, as we just said, there are opinions that the Kutim are true Gerim, ultimately, after further investigation, it was discovered that the Kutim were worshipping Avodah Zarah. And once it was clearly determined that the Kutim were worshipping as Avodah Zarah, there is no question, says the Rambam, that they're not considered members of the Jewish people. But the Mishnah that we begin with today is still speaking about the time where they were acting as proper Jews. Because they were acting as proper Jews, they're considered Geirei Emes. And now the question is, how does the halacha treat a get, as we're discussing in our Masechta? What would be the halacha if there's a get with a kuti as a ger? So it says the Mishnah called get sheyeshel of a kuti, any get that has on it, any shtar, as Rashi explains, the word get in our Mishnah should not be understood as a get that we think about in our Masechta, get a divorce between a husband and wife. Rather, it's another way of, when the Mishnah uses the word get, it represents a get that of a shtar, a document, any type of legal document. And the Chasam Sofer explains, why is a regular document called a get? The Chasam Sofer suggests that we discussed at the beginning of our Masechta that the reason a get, a divorce, is called a get, so we learned because there's some sort of a plant that separates anything that comes, that separates itself from anything that comes in contact with it. And that's why it's appropriate to call a get, which separates a husband from a wife, a get. But then the Chasam Sofer suggests that there's a plant with the same name, get, but what that plant does, it actually draws near anything that comes contact with it. When you have a document, if you have a document that is representing a transaction between two people, so that means that these two individuals decided to connect to each other. Since these two people decided to connect to each other, says the Chasam Sofer, that's why it's called a get, because it represents a relationship that's built around this document. So says the Mishnah, kol get sheyeshel of eid kuti, any get that has on it eid get, a kuti signed that it puzzle, is disqualified, chutz mi gitin nashim shechurei avodim, except for get that separates a husband and a wife, and a shikri avodim, a document that frees the slave. It says the Mishnah, Maisa Shavir Lufnei Rabbi Gamliel, Lekfar Usnoi. They once brought to Rabbi Gamliel in the Kfar Usnoi, get Ishop. Vaya Edov Chsum, Edov Kutim. The Edom who was signed in it, where they Kutim, the Hechshir, and he said that the get is a kosher get. Why is a Kuti that signed on a regular star disqualified? Because Rashi explains, we're concerned that they're going to say something which is not true. And therefore, because we're concerned that they're not careful with the truth, they become Edi Sheker. So ask the Pnei Yeshua, if that's the case, that the Kutim are people that we're concerned are not careful with the truth, how could they be kosher for Get Isher for Shtar Shichra? So he quotes to Yerushalmi, that the Kutim are not to be trusted when it comes to financial matters. And that's why a document that reflects a financial transaction, we can't trust them. But when it comes to Divrei Isser, marital status, if the Eved is an Eved, for that, they're not accused. He explains, the Pnei Yeshua, in explaining the Yerushalmi, that the question that the Pnei Yeshua wants to analyze is if somebody is disqualified to be an aid for one type of document, does that cause they should be completely disqualified? So he says, obviously, it is the opinion of Yerushalmi, just because somebody is not to be trusted in one area of halacha, that doesn't affect another area halacha. But then, he says, that might be the opinion of the Yerushalmi, but we clearly don't paskin that way. And we clearly hold that if somebody's accused not to tell the truth, he's accused under all circumstances. So we're back to our question, how could a Kuti be disqualified for regular documents, for financial documents, but be trusted for these types of documents? Says the Pnei Yeshua, if we knew for certain that Kutim are not to be trusted, then we can never trust them for any type of document. The way to understand the Mishnah is there's a concern about their honesty. Since there's a concern of their honesty, so for Dine Mominus, we're going to disqualify them. But for other types of documents, we're going to be more lenient and we will accept their testimony. But Rabbi Zalman, Zatzal, in the Evan HaOzel, asks the question, even if we'll say that the Kutim are Geri Emes, and even if we'll say, as we just learned, that we don't know for certain that they're not dishonest, they certainly did not believe in Torah Shabbat Peh. So how could an individual who doesn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh be accepted to be an aid on a get? So he answers that the reason they didn't believe in Torah Shabbat Peh is because they were never taught Torah Shabbat Peh. And because they were never taught Torah Shabbat Peh, he says they're in the category of a Tinik Shanishba, and therefore we can be more lenient. Ask the Gemara, Mani Masnisim, who is the Tan of our Mishnah? So the Maram Shif points out, shouldn't have the Gemara just asked a simpler question? Why did Gemara start to try to identify, as we're going to learn, who is the Tan of our Mishnah, and then have a difficulty identifying who exactly is the Tan of the Mishnah? The Gemara should have said a simple question. How come we differentiate between Gitei Nishim and Shtechurei Avadim versus all other situations? So he says, if not for the opinions that we're going to learn and see how those opinions could be consistent with our Mishnah, we would say that Chazal were machmer not to accept the Eidus of Kutim. But as we've learned many times in a Masechta, there's a concept of Mishmiguna Kila Barabonim. By Gitin, we're more lenient. We have a similar concept to help the Eved go free. We're more lenient. And that's why we would easily be able to understand why Chazal were more lenient by Gitei Noshim Eshtechurei Avadim versus all other documents. But once we're going to learn the brises that we're just going to learn, that this type of distinction is not cited, so now we need to understand how to understand our Mishnah. Because says the Gemara, Mani Masnisin, who's the Tana of our Mishnah? It seems like a Tana Kama, like Rabbi Loza, like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. It's not consistent with any of these Tanoim. The Tanya, the Braisa teaches us, Matzah's Kuti, Matzah that was baked through a Kuti, Materis, maybe eaten on Pesach. We don't have to be concerned that the Matzah is Chametz. Because they know there's a din in the Torah that you're not allowed to eat Chametz on Pesach, so they don't violate anything that's said explicitly in the Torah, and they're going to be careful that not to make sure that their matzah is not chametz. Furthermore, says the Braisa, besides that, of course, we may not eat chametz on Pesach, there's another halacha, and that is that on Pesach, the matzah that we eat on the first night of Pesach in Eretz Yisrael has to be made l'shem mitzvah matzah. And we could be confident that they make it properly. Rabbi Lazar Oyser, he says you can't eat the matzah of Chutim. Not only can't you be yoytze the mitzvah matzah on the first night of Pesach with the matzah that was baked by Chutim, but you may not eat matzah all of Pesach. The fish and became the dukei mitzvahs. They're not careful with all the details of the mitzvahs. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Oymer, kol mitzvah shechzikah by Chutim. Any mitzvah that the Kutim are careful about, harbe medagdik them by Yosem Yisrael, they could be more, they're more careful than even Yisrael are, and we could completely rely on them. So Tarsus asks the question, but isn't the halacha that the Gemara Masechet Avodah Zarah teaches us that Chazal taught us that we're not allowed to eat pita shakuti, the bread of a kuti, says, so that should be another issue why we may not eat their matzah. So Tosfos answers that we're not talking about that the dough belongs to Kuti. The dough that we're talking about here is dough that belongs to Jew. The Kuti was the one that baked it. Tosfos from Masechta Kedushin asked the same question, and there Tosfos suggests that if it's the dough of a Jew, even the dough of a Kuti, but if it's made in the home of a Jew, then the halacha is, we could eat that matzah. There's no problem with pita shakuti. But then Taisa asks a question. Even though kutim, according to certain opinions that we just learned, are careful, they're only careful in the matzahs that they make for themselves. We who know that when the Torah says lifnei evil esita mechshel means that not only do we have to be careful, but we have to be careful not to cause that another person should do an avera. The kutim don't interpret lifnei evil esita mechshel that way. So the question is, how can we rely on the kutim when they're feeding us the matzah? They don't care about us. So Tosfos answers that the matzah we're speaking about here is matzah that the kuti baked for himself. And after he baked that matzah for himself, the question is, can we use that matzah for ourselves? So now the Gemara analyzes. Mani, who can we identify as the Tana of our Mishnah? Itanakama, if we're going to say that the Tanakama, who's lenient with the Kutim, so afila shar shtaros nami, we can rely on the Kutim for all documents. Irebelazer, and if it's going to follow that the opinion of Rebelazer, who doesn't trust the Kutim in any way because they don't know how to do a mitzvah properly, then the halacha ought to be that feel get isha namiloi. Even by get, we should not trust them to be edim. V, Rav Shimon Gamliel, and if we're going to want to suggest that our Mishnah follows the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, ida ichsig, if we know that the Kuti is careful and does what he's supposed to do, so then I feel b'shar shtaros nami. Even by other documents, we should be able to trust him. V'deloy achsik, if we're talking about a kuti whom we cannot trust, so then I feel get isha nami loy, then the kuti should be trusted. Answers the Gemara, v'chi teima, if you want to say Rav Shimon Gamliel, that the Tana of our Mishnah is the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, and the achsik b'ha, we know that the kutim are trustworthy regarding Gittei Noshim, and they're trustworthy regarding Shechurei Avodim, the documents of freeing an Eved, V'loi Achsik Baha, but they're not trustworthy regarding other documents, says the Gemara, let's learn the Mishnah again. The Mishnah said, 8 kuti. So what did the Mishnah say? That even when we're lenient regarding kutim, we're only lenient when there's one kuti 8. But if, asked the Gemara, we're following the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, and we're saying that Rav Shimon Gamliel says that as far as Gitei Noshim and Shechurei Avadim are concerned, the Kutim are to be trusted. So Mayir Yichad, why does the Mishnah limit that we could only trust one Kuti? A field train Nami, we should be able to trust even two Kutim who sign on a document. Alama Amar Rabbi Elazar, why did Rabbi Elazar say the Lechshirbo, we only allow a kuti to be saying testimony, only when there's one kuti aid. And if he's trustworthy, we should trust him even when there are two aidim. Answers the Gemara, La'olam Rabbi Elazar. Mishnah is following the opinion of Rabbi Elazar, that the kutim are not to be trusted. The Mishnah that says that we allow a kuti to sign on a get, is referring to a situation kagoin the chosim yusol b'soif. There are two witnesses on this document, and the kuti is the one that signed on top, and then the yusol signed below him. That's the case where the Mishnah is going to allow us to rely on the opinion of on a kuti. Why? Di lav the kuti chaver. If not this kuti who was signed on the shtar was a reliable person, then no Yisrael, no Yisrael would allow his name to appear under that kuti. And therefore the Yisrael who signs below the kuti, what he's saying is that I know this kuti, and since I know this kuti, and I know that this kuti is a trustworthy, reliable kuti, and therefore the kuti, we allow the kuti to, we allow the shtar to pass. But ask Taisvis, so it turns out that who is really giving validity to the shtar? The Yisrael who's signing below the kuti. And we know that any document, ask Taisvis, that needs to have two eidim, each eid represents 50%. Here, the Yisrael, who's signing below the kuti, is representing more than 50%. Because if I didn't have his signature below the kuti, I wouldn't have anything. So Taisus answers that, again, going back to what we discussed at the beginning of our shir. We discussed at the beginning of our shir that really kutim, our Mishnah is of the opinion, that kutim geri emes, and we can trust kutim. We only have a weak chash. And therefore, once you have a Yisrael signing below the kuti, that weak considering falls away, and both Edim are going to be the ones that are making the ishtar. The Rashba says a different word. He says that this Yisrael who's signing below the kuti is and essentially saying that I know that this kuti is a trustworthy person, is not to be viewed as he's saying edus. What we look at is he's saying a gilui milsa. He's just saying information that I know that this kuti is a trustworthy person. When he's only doing a gilui milsa, Taisa's concern is not really there. Ihachi, ask the Gemara if that's the way we're going to learn. That once a Yisrael signs below the kuti, that is a testimony that the kuti is to be relied on. So afil shtar shtar mitznami. Then the halacha is that even by other documents, as long as the Yisrael is signing below the kuti, it should be good enough, says the Gemara. Ella, the reason we don't do that, Amrina, because we need to be concerned. Somebody approaches the Yisrael and asks him to sign the shtar. He doesn't know who the other eight is, and he's a person of good manners, and he believes that probably or possibly the person who's going to sign above my name is a very distinguished individual, and it's only appropriate that he should sign above me. And therefore, the fact that he signed below doesn't mean anything. So that's why by other shtaros were not lenient just because the Yisrael is signed under the Kuti. So says the Gemara, if that's a real issue, so Chanami by a get should be the same thing. Why shouldn't we be concerned? That nobody, that the Yisrael may be signed below the Kuti, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the Yisrael knew that it was going to be this Kuti who he's signing along with. Amar Papa, to answer this question, says Rav Papa Zoysemeres, because our Mishnah does differentiate between Gittei Noshim and all other types of documents, what we see from here is, Eidei get ein chosim b'loi zeh. Edom on a get don't ever sign without one without the other. And therefore, if a Yisrael signed below the Kuti, it's clearly an indication that the Yisrael knew that the person who's signing above him is the Kuti, and he felt comfortable in signing because he knows that this Kuti is reliable. Ask the Gemara, why is there such a halacha, specifically by Gittin, that Edom have to all sign together? My tam amar avashi, because gzeiru mishum kulchem. And then is that if a husband said to a group of people, I want you all to be the witnesses on my get, then the halacha is that all of them have to sign. And not, if not all of them sign, then the get is possible. And therefore, in order to make sure that everybody who's supposed to sign signs together, the halacha teaches us Rav Papa through Rav Ashi's explanation is that they all have to sign together. Now that we know that the halacha is that they have to all sign together, then the Yisrael signs below the Yisrael signing below the Kuti is clearly an indication that he knew that the Kuti is going to be an aid, and he knew and he checked and he knows that the Kuti that's signing on this get is reliable. Gufa, going back to Rabbi Lazar's explanation of the halacha of our Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Lazar, Lachshuri El Eid Kuti Eid Echad Kuti Bovad. When we're lenient with an Eid Echad with a Kuti, it's only if he's on Eid Echad by himself. Ask the Gemara, what is Rabbi Lazar teaching us that wasn't really said quite openly in the Mishnah? My Kamashmon, Tanina, the Mishnah said Kol get sheyesh alav eid kuti pasul. So it's clear that the case of our Mishnah is only when there's only one eid kuti. Answers the Gemara. Im masnisen, if we only had our Mishnah, hava min afilu trei. That when we say kutim, when the halacha allows kutim to be eidim, you could even have two kutim. Trei nami. So if that's the case, why did the Mishnah only speak about one? The reason the Mishnah chose to speak about only one kutim, shem deshtaris, afil chad namiloi. Because we would think that the reason the Mishnah spoke about one aid is to show us that really by getting, I trust two aid, two kutim. But I would think that by other documents, we were stricter, but one kuti we maybe can't trust. Kamashmon, that's why Rabbi Lazar comes to teach us no. Rabbi Lazar comes to teach us that by other documents, we don't trust kutim at all. And by a get, where we are more lenient and do trust the kuti, only one kuti, no more. Ask the Gemara, is that true? Betray loy, we can't accept a get with two kutim. Ask the Mevaktani, let's continue learning the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Maisa vil of Nera Gamliel, Kfar Usnoi, get Isha, v'yeidim, Eidei kutim v'echshir. So the Mishnah clearly indicates that there were two kutim, and they accepted it. Amar Abaya, says Abaya, you have to change the wording of the Mishnah. Eidov is indeed Loshen Rabim, plural, which would indicate that they had two Eidim. But to me, the right Girsan our Mishnah is Eidoi, only one Eid. Rav Amma, Rav says L'Oilam, the way to learn the Mishnah is Trei. V'Rav Gamliel Miflik Polig, and that's actually, Rabbi Gamliel is actually representing a different opinion than the Tanna Kamma. And the way to understand the Mishnah, says Rava, is Chsuri Mechzvach Tani. The Tanna Kamma said, we could be lenient by Gittin and accept one Kuti. Says the Gemara, Chsuri Mechzvach Tani, Rabbi Gamliel, Machshe B'Shnayim. Gamliel says you could even trust two Kuti, two kutim. It says the Gemara, "Ma'is nami shevir lefnei Gamliel kfar shnoi get isha." They brought her of Gamliel a get isha. Vaya eid of kutim, and there were two kutim eidim, and he held that even two kutim are kosher. And as Tosfos explains, why was Rav Gamliel lenient? Because he holds that the kutim were careful by Gite Noshim Shechrur Avodim. They weren't careful by other documents, and therefore Rav Gamliel says, since I know that they are careful with Gite Noshim Shechrur Avodim, we could completely accept them. Tosfos Yontif says a little different pshat. Tosfos Yontif says that the machloikis between the Tanakam and Rav Gamliel is Rav Gamliel says, I know the kutim are careful with Gitei Noshim Shekur Evodim, and therefore we could trust them like any Jew, and you could have two Edom of kutim. The Tanakam is still not that ready to be lenient. He's still concerned, particularly as I saw the Tosfos Rid answers. At the end of the day, a get represents something very serious about an Eishes Ish. And therefore, even though technically maybe two kutim should be accepted, the Rabbanan said, rather be super careful and only accept one kuti. Says the Mishnah, Kol ashtaros ha'olam ba'akosh lev d'kachavim, all documents that are processed through non-Jewish courts, api shechosmeim lev d'kachavim, even though the signers are akum ksherim, chutz mi gitei nosh mishkurei avodim, even if the document was written by a Jewish cipher, since if the people who assigned them are non-Jewish, and as we've learned this concept previously, and we'll speak about it more in our shir, someone who's not in the parsha of Gittin Kedushin cannot be an aid to Gittin Kedushin. And since Akum aren't in that parsha, they cannot be in that. Since Akum are not in that parsha, therefore, the halacha is that they can't be signers, they can't be edim. Shimon Amar Af Elu Ksherim, even if Akum signed the get, it would be acceptable. V'lo Hiskru, the reason why we learned in the yeshiva that if Akum are the edim, it's possible, as Manch Nasib Ejit, if it wasn't done in a court. But if it was done in a court, then we would be able to accept them. So our Mishnah says that documents that are processed by a non-Jewish court are to be trusted even if they're signed by non-Jews. And as we're going to learn in the Gemara, even though non-Jews are possible eidos, still we're ready to accept that these courts, which are established courts, will not process a document unless it's honest. So the Rishonim asked the following question. We know that the Gemara says that if Moshe Rabbeinu would say testimony on behalf of a relative, his testimony would not be accepted. Even though certainly Moshe Rabbeinu, we could be confident, will always say the truth. The Torah says a relative can't say Eidus, and therefore it doesn't make a difference who Moshe Rabbeinu is. So the same question should come up. Once the Torah told us that an Akum cannot be an aid, so why does it make a difference if their courts are honest? So the Mordechai quotes a Rishon who's called Rabbeinu Yaakov. He says that when we say that a relative can't say Eidus, it's not because we're worried that he's saying something not true. The halacha is because the Torah says that they're not kosher to be eidus. Since the Torah says they're not kosher to be eidus, therefore, says the Mordechai, that so a relative can never say eidus. It has nothing to do with being an honest or dishonest person. He says, however, the reason the Torah says an Akum can't say Eidus is because we're concerned with their trustworthiness. And therefore, in a case where we don't have to be concerned about it, as our Mishnah mentions, we could be more lenient. The Mordechai himself actually disagrees with Rabbeinu Yaakov. And he says that actually Akum are invalid min haTorah to be Edom under all circumstances. He says that the reason our Mishnah is lenient with these documents that were processed in a non-Jewish court is a special takana de Rabbanon that they made that we could accept these type of documents. I also saw that the Sefer Chashukei Chemed has an interesting discussion. And that is, we're learning now that we could trust the Bezdin, the court of an Akum. And question is, if a Bezdin, for example, summons somebody to Bezdin and he refuses to come, they're sent three Azmanas and they refuse to come, the halacha is very clear with different halachas what should be or should not be done in such circumstances. One of the things that the Gemara suggests, that if somebody is given a hazmana three times, then the halacha is that, and he still refuses to come, he can be put into cheirim. So the question that I saw the Paiskim discuss is, what would be the halacha if the hazmana was sent by three times by Bezdin? If the hazmana was sent three times by Bezdin through registered mail. Our Gemara just established that we could trust the non-Jewish court if we know that it's an honest court under certain circumstances that we're going to discuss in Mitzvah Shem and the Gemara. And the question is, what would be the halacha? Can we trust the mail through registered mail? And the Chashukei Chemed seems to suggest, if we have no reason to believe that the mail that's sent registered is not delivered, we're confident that it's delivered, just like our Mishnah says, we could trust them here, we could trust them there. Says the Gemara, our Mishnah said that any document that was processed by the non-Jewish court can be accepted. And to points out the Gemara, Kapasik Vatani, our Mishnah said a general rule, Loishna Mecher, whether it's a document of sale, and a document of sale, and this is a very important point, is only here to be shtar raya, to say that this transaction took place, because the transaction really takes place through the kinyan. When I buy the whatever I'm buying, when we make the kinyan or I pay, the loshta matana. In a matana where there's no money exchange, there's no kinyan, the shtar is what makes the shtar, that makes the document, that makes the transaction into a transaction. And our Mishnah says, under all circumstances, we could accept this document. So points out the Gemara. Bishlam Amachar, by a sale, we could understand, Bikiyav Zazi Kamayu, the moment that the money was transferred, Hu Dekana, that's when the Kenyan takes place. Shtarer Raya Balmahu. The Shtar is only just to be a document to show that this took place. And if the court had not seen that this transaction, this exchange of funds, had taken place, they would have never written this document. And that's why Kasfin Leishtara, they write the shtar, and we could trust that shtar. But ask the Gemara, Elamatana, when we talk about a shtar matana, but my cunning, what affects the transaction? Labahai shtara. This shtar makes the transaction. And ask the Gemara, since the shtar is made by a non-Jewish court, chas b'balmahu, it's not considered a valid shtar. So the Tzoyis asks, our Mishnah is obviously under the impression that we can trust the Akum. So why all of a sudden here don't we trust the Akum and say that the shtar that they make is chas b'alma? So the Tzoyis answers, a similar concept to what we learned in our Mishnah. The Tzoyis says that anything, any parash in the Torah that don't include the Akum, Akum are not included in that parash. And he says, the halacha of shtar, the halacha of shtaris, are limited to Yisrael and not to Akum. And since the parash of shtaris was only said to Yisrael, not to Akum, how could a shtar, which creates a transaction, be acceptable if it was made by Akum? To which Shmuel answers, Din and the Machusa Din. we have a concept of dina mechusa dina, and therefore the halacha is that we could accept any document that they process. There's a big machlokes rishonim. Why dina mechusa dina? Some rishonim explain. The Rashbam says that since everybody in the country that lives in a country accepts the rule of the government, so it's self-understood that if we want to live in a society, if we want to live in a normal environment, a normal atmosphere, we accept the rules of the government. The other explanation that the Rishonim suggest is the government owns the land, and since they own the land, they can make whatever rules they make. What will be the nafka mina? The nafka mina will be Eretz Yisrael. If we learn that the reason for dina and machus dina is because we all who live in a country accept the rule of the land, so that would be the case in Eretz Yisrael as well. If, however, the reason for dina and machus dina is because the government owns the country, the government doesn't own Eretz Yisrael. Every Jew has a Yisrael. Every Jew has a share in Eretz Yisrael. The Evan Ozel says that the underlying consideration in all these explanations goes back to a concept that we've been mentioning throughout our shir. And that is that anything that the goyim, that the akam are related to, they have a right and their halachic position is respected. And says the Evan Ozel that amongst the Shevin Mitzvah B'nai Noach is dinim. And since it's dinim, which means civil law, is their halacha, so they are connected to civil law, and that's the underlying factor of din and the machusa din. Also, the Rishonim and Achronim explain, going back to something we mentioned a moment ago, is din and the machusa dina only by a non-Jewish country, or is din and the machusa dina going to be by a Jewish country also? The Dvar Avram, because the Dvar Avram adds another dimension into the discussion of Dina and the Machus Dina. And the dimension that he adds to this discussion is that there's a concept of Hefker Bezdin Hefker, which he expands and says that applies even to non-Jewish courts. But if that's the consideration, suggests the Dvar Avram, so Hefker Bezdin Hefker, if it applies to non-Jewish courts, it certainly applies to Jewish courts as well. We know that there's much discussion about Dina Machus Dina, and not always have people been as careful about Dina Machus Dina as maybe they ought to be, particularly after we learn our Gemara that teaches us the basis for Dina Machus Dina. But there's a very important opinion cited by Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam says we can only apply the concept of Dina Machus Dina if the government applies rules equally to Jews and non-Jews. But if the government doesn't apply rules equally to Jews and non-Jews, if Jews are singled out to be treated differently, then there's no dina mechusa dina. And actually, the source for that concept goes back to Mitzrayim, where Paroi tells the Miyaldos Havriyos, he tells the Yocheved and Miriam, Shifra and Puah, Miyaldos Havriyos, when you help the Jewish women have children, orisim alavnayim, you should see when they're having a baby in Banhu. If it's a boy, they meet and I say you should kill them. And the pasuk says that they didn't follow the directions. And the question is that why not? Isn't there a rule of dina the mechusa dina? The answer is that the Yocheved and Miriam, Shifra and Pua gave Paro the answer. They said, kiloi kemitzriyos ha'evriyos. Since the rule you passed is a rule that only applies to the Mitzrim, to the Ivrim, to the Jews, and not to the Mitzrim, there's no dina machus dina if you pass those type of laws. And what did Paroi ultimately do? He made the rule kol ben ayilod, that everybody, because he realized if there's going to be rules that single out Jews, we won't say dina machus dina. Ibai Seima, the way to learn the Mishnah is indeed not only are Gitei Nishim that are made by our cause of Akum not acceptable. But the way to learn the Mishnah is chutz mikigite nishim, anything that's like a get, meaning that we, as we've been learning, there are two types of documents. There are documents that create the transaction, and there are documents that testify to the transaction. A get is certainly a document that creates the transaction. A shtar matana, as we're learning, is also that type of a document. And indeed, the Mishnah is saying that any document that creates a transaction, just like a get, won't be acceptable if it creates the transaction, because it creates a transaction, and that can't be processed through a court of Akum. So too will be the halacha regarding shtar matana, that it won't be kosher through a kosher Akum, because courts of Akum cannot affect transactions.